Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Thursday. Lots of stuff to talk about on the podcast. USC's Pro Day is on Wednesday. Spring football starts up a little bit later on this afternoon, so we're going to talk about all of that stuff with Dan Weber, the beat writer and columnist at USCFootball.com. If you have any questions or comments for us, drop us an email. Podcast at USCFootball.com is the email address. If you want to give us a call, we love that too. We have voicemail to get to today, but 641-715-3900 is the number. Then dial extension 816-646. You can go to our website too, peristylepodcast.com. Click on the left side of the page and you can leave a voicemail right from your computer or mobile device. We're on the iTunes. So if you want to go on there and subscribe, that'd be great. Leave us a 5-star rating and some positive feedback. We always love that. We can also find us on Google Play and Audio Boom and TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Radio. Lots of different ways to find us on the interweb. So without further ado, let's bring in Dan Weber. What is up, Dan? How are you?
Oh, doing good. It's great to, after a week off, get back to practice and have the have Pro Day sandwiched in on Wednesday. So we had a week of basketball and then now a big week of football. So that's kind of neat.
It is kind of neat, and it was a kind of a neat day out there yesterday at USC Pro Day, if you don't know. So at 10 a.m. on Cromwell Field, the players were out there, a lot of NFL scouts, a lot of NFL coaches, a bunch of media, and of course players. Current players and former players were hanging out mostly in the stands watching. It was closed to the public, so you couldn't come by if you're just a fan. And even if you're an agent of one of the players, you weren't allowed to come into the area, which was kind of a new one. So, that, you know, we talked to a couple of those guys outside, Cromwell Field. They weren't allowed to come in. But overall, Dan, what were your kind of thoughts of, USC Pro Day?
You know what? I think more so, I know we'd always in the past, it was like, okay, these guys are in the NFL now. It's a business, blah, blah, blah. And I kind of wrote that today. It was more of a family kind of thing. I mean, you know, hopeful guys still feeling very much at home at USC. Their families are allowed to come. So you get this sense of, you know, family all around. You know, even the guys who, you know, maybe didn't kind of have the combine they wanted. You know, the offensive linemen, Damian Mama and Chad Wheeler, although Zach Banner said he was real pleased with his combine. And he, you know, he felt like he did well, but a chance for them. And I know they were really upbeat about, oh, they had a better day yesterday. You know, they improved here and there. Chad still got a wrist injury that makes it hard for him to do the bench press. And, Damian still got a pec problem, but he did run faster. And but I just liked it. They were all kind of upbeat. I also liked the fact that kind of the family thing was, you know, having Pete Carroll there and his blogger, Ben Malcolmson, USC grad, you know, former walk-on, and Norm Chow there, and Ken Norton, and just, you know, a lot of places you looked, you saw, you know, Trojans, former Trojans. It was kind of neat. And, you know, as you said, we talked to Lee Steinberg, who has, you know, the Newport Beach agent, who's kind of doing his come back here, and with his son Matt, who is a USC graduate, and they have their first USC player signed, and Chad Wheeler. So there was kind of a sense of that, you know, kind of family thing, and it was pretty nice. And it ended up pretty much talking to Adoree, who, where a lot of the others talked about coming back to USC after training, you know, for the combine and training for the NFL. Adoree didn't have to because he's still there. I mean, he was talking about his class in Orson Welles films and gerontology, and he's going to pick up 12 more hours this semester. And then he's only 12 away from his degree. And it's always fun to talk to Dor. He's an interesting kid. He's got so much going about different things, and he has a different take on things. I know when the USC, one of the, you know, PR minders came by and said, last question, and Dor said, no, I'll stay here as long as you want. No, don't have to hurry me along. Well, the NFL Network wanted him for an interview. But that's been our history with Dor. He'll stay and talk to you and as long as you want and answer every question. And you realize how much you like these kids. And now they're, you're not covering them as USC players, but you just sort of know them as kids that you've watched, grow up and develop. And you're, just like their families, you're pulling for them. And, hope it all works out for them. And that's kind of what yesterday was like. It did have a different feel. You're right.
Yeah, a little bit different feel, but it was fun seeing some of the former coaches and former players. Guys you see a lot, like a Sean Cody, but we saw like Brandon Hancock, who I haven't seen in a long time. Fred Davis, I got to talk to him for a little while. It was cool to kind of see him, walking around. And it was funny. He wasn't the USC wide receiver coach for long, but it was John Morton, if you remember him.
Yep.
He was there, and I don't know where
he was actually trying to. I said, "Where have you been since And he went down the list of teams, and I know the 49ers for 4 years, and the Saints for a couple of years, and I said, "Now where are you?" And he said, "He's with the Jets." And I said, "Oh, okay." I said, "Man, it is hard to keep up with you guys, and it's kind of neat." I know Norm Chow came by, and we're talking to him when Pete came up, and Pete was shaking hands, and I said to Pete, I said, "Norm, just because we're in the middle of all this building that's going on at USC now, and a lot of those guys, McKay Center wasn't there when they were coaching," and Norm looked at Pete, Norm said to Pete, that, he gave Pete credit for, "This is all because of you building all this." And Pete looked like, "Oh, no, don't say that." He said, "There were a lot of people before me, and just one of the guys that, that came along." So it was kind of nice, a lot of nice little moments like that. But one of the other things you found out, two things about why Pete is Pete. One, Sean Cody said, he said that Pete came up and said, and wanted to know all about Stevie Tuikalavatu. How good, can he be a legitimate, run stopper at nose, and what Sean thought about him. And Sean said, "He's going to play 12 years in the NFL, more than Sean." He said, "He's one of those guys that's never going to get injured. He's great attitude, real, and he looked really good yesterday. I thought Stevie did." And then the other thing from Pete was, according to Dory, Pete was the only coach about playing both ways. And it was the first one that raised the possibility of also playing offense. So I thought that probably shows where Pete, as he always said, wanted to think outside the box, but he wasn't somebody who's limited to just seeing Dory as a defensive back and a kick returner. So it was kind of nice to see stuff like that come full circle.
For sure. It was funny. I regret not going, and I tried to talk to John Morton, but he was talking to someone that I didn't get to go back around to him. It was funny when he was at USC, and Dan Wyke, Dan, I don't think you were the beat writer for us at that time, right? Like you covered, or was that before? Do you remember?
That was before. I wasn't the beat writer when he was here.
Okay. So Dan,
I was the beat writer at, for Riverside.
So you were still,
I mean, I covered him.
Yeah. Okay. So Dan Wyke was our beat writer. He's now at the LA Times covering the Clippers. He was actually at the Orange County Register for years and he just moved over. But I was substituting on Dan Wyke's like softball team up in El Segundo, and he was playing first base and I was playing shortstop. And then the team we were playing, John Morton was on. So it was like, I think it was like in July. It's like when they had actually a little bit of time off. And so Dan and I go like, "Hey, what's up, man?" He was playing like outfield, like he's really fast. He was an NFL wide receiver, And, I remember he hit a ball, like a hard ground ball, like in the hole or something that I snagged. and I threw him out at first, and he just kept running right to the outfield. He didn't want to talk about it ever since. So I wanted to go and see if he remembered that, but I do because I thought it was kind of funny.
That's too bad. Yeah. I mean, it was great to see. And like you mentioned, Fred Davis, one of the things Fred said, he's still in D.C., working like crazy, hoping he gets another chance. He gets to come back. He looks like he's in great shape. But he said, I hear USC's got another tight end. He said, really can play, a kid from Florida. And I said, yeah, Daniel, the modern baby, I think he's, he said, well, it'd be time for, it's time for USC to have another Mackey Award winner. So, Fred's all upbeat about, Daniel from everything he's heard. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's good. We wish him the best. Hopefully, you know, he seemed kind of upbeat about stuff. And, you know, I talked with him a little bit about just seeing people coming through the program. Like, he was asking how the site's doing. I'm like, yeah, you know, I told we moved over to Scout a couple of years ago, but it's just funny to see you guys. And, like, you know, he wasn't someone we covered as much because he was in Ohio, but like a Mark right. Sanchez, you know, covered him when he was like 16 years old in high school. And then you see him through college. And you see him, you know, you don't see him much in the NFL, but like to run into him at the Rose Bowl after the game and have him, you know, give you a bro hug and say hello and talk. It's just funny. Like, yeah, there's a kid, you've known them like their whole adult lives, which is kind of strange, you know, but it's, you know, kind of a fun part of what we do.
Yeah, no, I thought yesterday was just had a really nice, nice vibe. And you get a chance to say kind of good luck and goodbye to, you know, to Zach and, you know, Damian and Chad, and it's more of a personal kind of a thing when you think about it, than just covering the football part of it. As big a part of that is, you're just, you know, telling them you wish them well and appreciate, you know, they've been, you know, you try to be, you know, really nice to them in terms of how we cover them, and they try to be nice to us. And I thought it was just one of those moments where you got a chance to deal with them just as, you know, young men are, you know, trying to get their careers off to a start. And I think for some of them, we really don't know how it's going to go. And then there were the two kids who probably gave up a lot coming to USC, Daquan Hampton and Isaac Whitney, both junior college. So they only had 2 years, and there was a pretty big adjustment, I think, for both of them year one. And, you know, at a position where, as it turned out, USC just had a lot more talent and depth than I think maybe anybody realized. So neither one of them, you know, got that great a chance to show necessarily what they could do. Daquan had, you know, the one big game at Washington. But both of them showed up so well. I mean, Isaac Whitney ran a 4.41 40, which would have been the fourth fastest time if he'd have gone to the combine of all wide receivers. Faster by a tenth of a second than, or a hundredth of a second than a Dory. Daquan had the 21 reps for a wide receiver. That's great at the bench press, 225 pounds. But then he also had the 41 and a half inch vertical, which I think is the best vertical ever for a USC guy. And what was he? 11 foot broad jump. So he had some really good, just terrific numbers, the kind of numbers. And at 6'3", 223 pounds, those are going to get him a lot of workouts. So those are numbers that are going to be really good for Daquan. And I think, and I told him, and I think the same thing for Isaac, there are a number of guys who probably had better pro careers than they did USC careers and longer and more chance to play. And I said, you know, both of you guys probably are in that, you know, category where you get in the right place, you get in the right opportunities and what have you. Who knows? So, and that's obviously what they're, you know, they're hoping for. Although I think Isaac has always been very, very proud of the fact that he's leaving with a USC degree as well. That's one of the greatest, you know, I think he said it. That was the, of all the things that he's done, you know, getting his USC degree is the greatest thing that he's accomplished. So, yeah, you wish those guys well, and you think they've got a chance to do, you know, just get with the right team, and get with somebody who give you a chance, and that'd be wonderful to see.
Yeah, it's funny. Like a guy like Daquan Hampton, you look at, and he's a that's like freaky kind of combine numbers or testing numbers. And I was looking, and I was like, I wonder if he had more career catches than he had repetitions on the bench press, which he had 21, which was really good. I thought I thought that was like second best among wide receivers, but it was actually the 41 vertical was like second best, I think, among wide receivers. I don't know where the 21, but do you have a guess how many career receptions Daquan Hampton has?
Boy, it'd be right there, wouldn't it? It'd be close.
It's close. I believe he had 15 his junior year, and then only 7 this past year. So he beats it by one. So he has 22.
And yet every time he got a chance, and that's not to say he should have gotten more chances or he shouldn't. It's just whenever he got a chance, he performed.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, you know, he was, it's just, you know, you're at that position. You got Juju there. You got Deontay coming along. You had Stephen Mitchell. You have, Adoree getting his share of catches. It just was one of those things that, stuff happens, and now you wish he does really get his chance. But he will not look like he can't play. If he goes to the NFL, wherever he goes, whosever camp he goes to, people are going to look at him and say, this kid has to be able to play. I mean, he just, he certainly got better catching the ball. I know he pulled a little bit. He ran a 4.66 with a little bit of a pull. And he wanted to show him he could do it, but I think he'll run better than that when he doesn't have that little bit of a, hamstring pull. But, you just wish him the best.
Yeah, so I think those guys helped themselves. Like, I thought Jordan Simmons looked like he ran pretty well. We'll see, what the scouts think of the drills.
Yeah, he was at 339 pounds. I thought he ran real well. I thought he did all the things. Well, we've seen him do that. There's no question his footwork, his setup is good. He looks like, he absolutely, when you look at him, you say, there's an NFL player. Now, if that knee would hold up, who knows? And a guy like Anthony Munoz at USC didn't ever make All-American, always was fighting a knee injury. I remember I was in Cincinnati at the time when they drafted him, and he didn't miss a game. I don't know if he missed a our NFL career. What you do in college isn't always, predictive. He turns out not an All-American at USC and maybe the greatest NFL, offensive lineman of all time. And you just never know. But I think Jordan has got a chance.
One guy that I had a right hamstring injury that I thought really could have helped himself at pro day, which I'm not sure what's going to happen now, is Leon McQuay, who wasn't at the NFL combine. So this was going to be kind of his time to shine. Didn't get to run. Didn't get to do DB drills. What are your thoughts on Leon McQuay? I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, Leon, he's pretty upbeat about the fact that in a few weeks, he's going to be okay. And he's going to be able to, start doing, individual workouts and things like that. And you never know. He might be the kind of kid where somebody will look at, he's 6'2", 197. I mean, he's just exactly right. And he's got the Penn State game. And he might be the kind of guy who somebody says, well, we can steal this guy. What he's got to do is find somebody who says, we're going to take a chance on him. We've got enough information to know that this kid can play. I mean, I think the Penn State game just does him wonders. He had the Nebraska game in the Holiday Bowl also. I mean, he's been a kid who's made big plays and really, come up and done some very good things. So, but he was pretty upbeat about it. He wasn't letting it get him down, the fact that his hamstring wouldn't let him go yesterday.
We'll have to see. Hopefully, you wish him the best kind of going forward. I wanted to switch into, unless there's anything else you wanted to talk about from the pro day, into some
of that's great. Yep.
Our questions from, interesting day out there. Questions from fans from spring football. Some of them are from a week ago. I don't think we had you on last week, right? Did we not do one or?
No, I think it was basketball week.
Oh, yeah. Week. It was basketball. So, and we had Shotgun on earlier. We're going to skip Harvey Hyde this week. I talked to him. He's on secret assignment. We could have squeezed one in, but I wanted to get Dan in because of pro day stuff, and he was there for that. So we'll get Harvey Hyde back on Monday and get his thoughts. He'll be out of practice on Saturday, so we'll get some thoughts from practice on him. So if you have any more questions for Harvey Hyde, you can send those in. And we'll knock out the ones that you guys have sent in for Dan right now. First is Stephen Poway. He said, given the lack of experience at wide receiver this year, how critical is it that Stephen Mitchell is returning for his final year of eligibility, hopefully in good health? Fight on, Steve and Poway.
Yeah, I think they're focused on getting young guys to be consistent at practice and to play consistent with their talent. And so, you know, that's the challenge with a lot of guys with a great deal of talent who know they're pretty good and, you know, haven't really gotten a chance to show it in games. And how does that play out? I know, talking to, T the other day, he really thinks that it plays out by consistency in practice. And I think that's where, a veteran like Stephen Mitchell can really help you is showing up. And he's been there, you know, he's still rehabbing, obviously, the knee surgery, but he's there every day. And I think, you know, having that presence, that veteran, really matters. I think having Jalen Green, having Deontay Burnett, kind of a young veteran, but stepping up, not a real vocal guy. But I think when we talked to Deontay the first week, he talked about the responsibilities of being a leader. So you see more and more of that, and I think at the wide receiver position, especially because of the youth there and the talent and the potential there. So Stephen Mitchell will definitely play into that, you know, as a veteran leader, returning, you know, for his last year and making sure things go right. I mean, we see how important Darius Rogers was last year as that second guy with Juju, who, you know, just did some of those things that veterans do. You look at Darius and his times maybe yesterday, numbers weren't all that great, but he made a lot of great plays for USC football over the years. And, you know, you have to respect that he just kept getting better and better because he just did whatever it took. You know, he may not be able to run past people all that well all the time, but he could make the tough catches. He could run the, you know, the good routes. He could, you know, get the yards after the catch. And that's what you're looking for, you know, with that group.
We have one from Tarek. He said, thoughts on John Houston so far. Is he looking bigger?
I don't know if he's looking a whole lot heavier, a little bit, a few pounds. He looks a little more mature physically, maybe not the same. And it was hard to measure him when he came in because of that back. And he just wasn't healthy, didn't feel good, wasn't able to, you know, show you what he could do. He looks different from last year. Last year he was a special teams guy and, you know, you could see glimpses. But this year with him in there, you know, right now as the starter opposite, you know, Cameron, on the inside of the wheel, he really, he can cover. I mean, you just notice how fast he can run. I mean, and how quickly he can get from here to there. And if they blitz him or if they, you know, have him in coverage, he can flat out fly. And I think he complements Cam Smith really well. I really like the look of the two of them. I think last year Michael Hutchings complimented Cam because of his smarts and his toughness and just knowing everything to do, you know, perfectly and all of that. But, John could add an extra dimension just because of his athleticism. I mean, he can just fly around the field. So, you know, I'm pretty optimistic about what John brings, to the table, the way he's looking right now. He looks just really healthy and, he looks like the guy that everybody, you know, thought he could be as that, you know, five-star coming out of high school.
We had a Stephen Poway sent a couple more in, so I'm going to read these ones. Now, this happened when I was on vacation, so I haven't really even dug into this yet, and I should. He said, I understand that modern-day senior kicker Chase McGrath has committed to USC. Do you know if he will be granted a scholarship? And do you know if he would be eligible to blue shirt?
I don't know that. We've talked about it. We haven't asked about that. We've got to do – you're right. We got to, you know, figure out what's going on there. So, and I don't even know what they're allowed to say about that, you know, when we're talking blue shirt and all that. So, but good question. We will find out.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much they're allowed to say, you know, publicly or even not publicly. You know, I don't know what the answer to that is. But I'm not sure you can really talk. We can't talk about anybody you're recruiting anyway. And the whole blue shirt thing adds another dimension to it. So let's see what we can find out.
For sure, yeah. And I apologize. Like, I was gone. I didn't really. As a kicker, I wasn't like all that. I didn't like. Oh, I need to find out what's going on here. So I apologize. But my gut is it would be like a blue shirt sort of thing where he'll come in. But I honestly do not know. We'll check it out. I don't know if. And Gerard tries not to pay attention to these things either. Shotgun probably would know, but we'll talk about it at practice, and Steve, we can kind of bring that up. He also wanted to know about the scholarship distribution chart, how many are available. So I think I have 84 right now. If Chase McGrath is added, that would go to 85, and that still includes three of the walk-ons, which they're out practicing, so you assume they're still on scholarship. We don't know. If there was a transfer or something coming in, then one of them would probably have had to drop off of scholarship. Could be like a Matt Lopes who's, you know, would get free tuition anyway. But yeah, so as of now, I don't think anything's changed, right, Dan? I think that's still the,
I don't think so. Count. I think the deal on the walk-on scholarships is essentially they're for a year. And, you know, a lot of times they go to seniors who are ready to graduate. And I think Matt could graduate if he wanted. I think he was back, you know, in between about whether he came back or not, and certainly looks like he decided to come back, and that's great. But I think they do have some flexibility there, depending on how things, you know, play out down the road. But it is nice, finally, after all this time, to maybe have to be doing some maneuvering around the 85 number. That would be, you know, they've had to do plenty of maneuvering around the, you know, 25 initial, you know, scholarship number. But to be able to actually have a full squad and maybe have to, you know, do this or do that in order to, you know, keep it at right at, you know, the 85 is great. So, but I know the one thing about the whole blue shirt thing is it can't happen until after the first day of fall practice. So when you're in the middle of spring practice, you'd probably say, okay, we can wait. That'll be another, that's for another day. And so the whole thought of a blue shirt allows you to say, well, we'll handle that when it comes around.
Yeah, I think that's the case pretty much there. So, but we'll find out. We'll see what we can find out from, USC and from practice. We had the last part of the question was, how likely is it that EJ Price returns to the team this summer? And if he does, would he be considered the front runner for the open left tackle spot? That's Stephen Poway again.
Yeah, I'm really trying to put people off of the whole thought of him coming back. And if he does, it will be some kind of an unplanned bonus. But I really don't think the idea that they would like to see him get squared away and the fact that he's still in school and all of that is connected to him returning to the team. I think it's connected to him returning to play football somewhere next year, because I think they believe that he really needs football to make his life happen the way it really needs to happen. But I don't know that they believe that he needs USC football or that USC football needs him at this point. I think they're really separate issues. And so I know it's hard for USC fans to separate the football part of this, the USC football part of this, from the E.J. Price getting himself together at USC right now. But I think he should. I think, you know, he may get himself together in ways in which people say, wow, that's great, or, you know, we're happy for him. Still, that may not, you know, result in him being a USC football player next year. I don't think the two are connected. I really don't. I know that's probably almost impossible to believe if you understand how the world, excuse me, how big time college football works. I mean, there are probably very few places where you could say that, you know, that if the coach is really involved and if they're doing whatever it takes to, you know, help a, you know, kid get squared away, they're not doing it for the kid necessarily. They're doing it for their football program. But I don't think that's the case with USC. And secondly, I'm not sure the E.J. Price, you know, that we saw was the five-star kid. I don't know if he, you know, how the evaluations went and how he became, you know, that player. I just don't think we saw that player in fall, last fall. I didn't. And so to say that he'd be the leading candidate, I think that's kind of a paper thing, you know, where you look and say, well, he was a five-star, and he didn't ever look to me like he was 6'5 and 325 to start with. I didn't have that sense. So I think if he's back and if he's on the team, which I think is a little bit of a longer shot than a lot of people think is the case, I think he had to really, you know, bust his tail to be in the picture and be in the mix. I mean, I think they give him a chance if they bring him back, if they let him come back. But I don't think there'd be anything just given to him because of his status when he was being recruited.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's kind of unlikely. And then, you know, and just to see the little bit of a scuffle that we saw on Tuesday, Dan, do you think something like that would give caution? Like, hey, do we want, you know, because there was someone, you know, he was someone that we talked about that there, you know, caused some potential locker room issues. I don't know if the little fight after practice was that, but I mean, it could lead to something like that.
There were some, you know, issues with teammates and teammates being encouraged not to hang out, you know, hang out with him or not to be around. And, you know, there was, you know, the anger management issues involving, you know, somebody on the staff and that kind of thing. I mean, there are some real hurdles, for EJ. So, and again, wish him all the best. I think he got good advice from people back home who basically said, don't come back, you know, and I think it's the smartest thing to do to stay at USC. Let's face it. The only place he can play Division I football next year and is USC. I mean, he can go somewhere and play at a lower division right away. He can go play junior college and then try to come back the year after. But, you know, by far, it's the smartest thing. If he wants to play at a really good big-time program, there's only one that he can do that at next year. So it's clearly in his best interest to, you know, make this happen. And whether he has the ability to, you know, to make it happen or not, again, I think it's a hard pull for him to get that done. He's just kind of in a different place. And that whole, you know, being part of the team and really, you know, getting everybody to feel like you're part of the team. He's got some things to overcome, as a result of his, you know, his freshman year. So, I don't know that we can even begin to guess how that plays out, but, and we're not going to know. I mean, there's just no way we can know how that kind of personal interaction. I mean, he's still in the dorm, you know, with a lot of those, you know, kids that were recruited, you know, in the same class with him. And, so how that all, you know, day to day works out, I don't think we're going to be privy to, but I would get the whole, well, he could come back and give USC, you know, an All-American offensive tackle and they need one. And I would not go there in terms of trying to figure this out.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, you know, he'll be around. We see, I saw Khalil Rogers out there yesterday watching Pro Day. He's still around. I guess it's hard to leave USC, Dan. You know, Dory Jackson's still taking classes.
Yeah, and I always thought, I know Khalil has signed with Iowa State, I guess, but I don't know if you sign or what you do exactly in those, that kind of a, you know, situation. He needs his spring classes to graduate. If you remember, what's his the quarterback who went to, well, I can't think of his name, went to Hawaii.
Max Whitlock,
and he needed, and he didn't make it, didn't get those classes. And I'm thinking, what if Khalil decided, you know what, I'd probably rather stay at, I don't know, is he in some no man's land? Could he, I mean, I'm not starting this to start, you know, any kind of, you know, speculation or whatever. It just hit me. What if he decided, oh, you know, I want to stay. Maybe I'll just stay. What would that do? You know, I don't know. Does he have a, you know, a commit, you know, are there ways in which you can commit to your next school as a grad transfer if you haven't graduated yet and all that? I don't know. There are a lot of rules that we probably still need to keep checking on, because stuff happens that that's not exactly ever happened before. Because usually a kid going to graduate transfer, he's gone. Then you know he's graduate, you know, he's a graduate transfer. They're not usually here, you know, because usually they want them to be at their next school for spring practice. Because when you've only got a year, you'd love to have them at spring practice so that they're ready to go when you get to the summer. So Khalil, when he goes to Iowa State, will only get, you know, that summer practice, and then he's got a, you know, got his senior year, and that's it. So who knows? There's all kinds of these, you know, graduate transfer, blue shirt, you know, all, you know, who, walk-ons and scholarship, you know, limits and all that kind of thing. It's a lot of stuff just keeps happening that, that there are no hard and fast, like the E.J. Price situation, there are no hard and fast rules or answers. And a lot of times people try to figure those things out before they happen. And I know my sense is always, let it play out. You'll know eventually. You can't know before it happens, because it might not really be knowable. You just see what happens.
Let's move on. Christian had a question. He said, I remember last year, Shotgun Spratling made it a point to comment on a single day USC dedicated to emphasizing tackling techniques during fall camp, which was, in his point of view, not enough. Do you think USC will dedicate any single practices out of the remainder of spring camp to tackling techniques and physical development? If they don't, do you think they should? Or do you think Or do you think they multi-emphasis tackling and physicality while installing their offense and defensive packages well already? And then small question, do you think Liam Jimmons is ready to have a similar role in playing time as Christian Rector did last season? So thanks. USC Peristyle Podcast, fight on from Christian.
Yeah, I think the when you do that kind of a single emphasis, that's mostly for kind of for show, or kind of for, you know, you just really want to make your point. I don't think it actually necessarily helps you tackle any better. I think that's, you've got to do that right every day at practice. They've already emphasized form tackling and angles and all of that kind of, you know, angled pursuit and angled tackling, and I think they're doing more shoulder tackling, and I think they're going more to the stuff that Pete Carroll has been teaching in Seattle, you know, at Seattle, and more effective because you get your body more in the way and much safer because you're not trying to, you know, drill somebody with your helmet. And so, but they're doing more of that already. We see it. And it looks good. You really like, you know, and I think because they combine the whole, you know, under control, but coming at speed and centering up on somebody. And I just think that's something you have to do every day, and it has to be part of everything you do. And they know, and I think the Rose Bowl reinforced it, that they got out of control, out of lanes, over-pursuit. They over-pursued, did things like that, and just didn't wrap. And I think there's a lot of emphasis on that. And having a guy like, for example, Jamel Cook, one of the reasons he's on the field now is knowing that he can play safety, but the thought that he'd be the slot cover guy, the nickel, with his pursuit, his quickness, his size at 6'4", he can play man, he can, you know, run with receivers anywhere. But the thing I like is he's so aggressive supporting the run. I mean, he is really good, but he doesn't over-pursue. He's totally under control. I mean, to see a guy get to the edge as quickly as he does to support the run, but he doesn't run by the play. He doesn't run by the ball. He's very much under control. And you're seeing more and more of that. I think he'll have a good influence on everybody just by being on the field, because his technique is so good. So yeah, I think the whole tackling issue is something that is already being emphasized and will be emphasized all throughout the year, because I think they understand, as much as we talk about offense, and as much as, you know, the focus is on Sam and the tight ends and the wide receivers and Rojo, I think they think, and I think I don't disagree, that this defense, with the athletes that they're going to put on the field, the quickness that they're going to have, the ability to do what Clancy wants to do in terms of playing on the other side of the line of scrimmage, because they're going to know what they're doing, having a year of playing this defense. And it's a communication heavy defense where you really have to know what you're doing. And I think they're going to have, I think they think this defense can be really special. And you know, it was in the Rose Bowl when it had to be. And at other times it wasn't. And I think they look at that fourth quarter in the Rose Bowl and say, this is the way we have to play defense, where they shut out Penn State had 49 points in three quarters and didn't score again. And, if this team shows up and plays that kind of defense every week next year, they are going to be in really good shape. And so I think a big part of that is the whole tackling, pursuit angles, under control, and being very, very quick and athletic and aggressive. So I think that'll be an everyday occurrence at practice.
What about Liam Jimmins?
Oh, I think Liam, that's a good comparison. Liam and yeah, I think he's got the chance to step up and be that next guy who gives you some good minutes. I think they're going to have a chance for three rotations, on the defensive line, and with some athletic guys with good quickness, with some young guys, some veteran guys, and a couple of guys like Liam haven't really gotten a chance to show, you know, what they can do. But I like the looks of their offensive line, which allows them to do, or their defensive line, which allows them to do some of the things Clancy, you know, wants to do. In terms of being really aggressive, but yeah, I think he's the next guy to be able to step up where Christian did last year.
Earl in West LA actually had a question about Khalil Rogers, which we kind of talked about already. So hopefully, Earl, Dan answered your question about that. We're gonna have a voicemail question. Let me play this one for you, Dan.
Hey guys, this is Daniel out of Los Angeles. Just had a quick question for the recruiting podcast or any podcast that would be able to answer this. Just wondering, is USC its own culprit when student athletes, specifically football and basketball, leave school early to pursue a professional career? And what I mean by that, if you think of any other conferences, and you know what, I'll throw the California Pac-12 schools in the mix as well. When you think of other conferences, specifically the Pac, the Power Five, not many other schools, maybe the Big Ten, not many other conferences academically can stack up against a USC, UCLA, Stanford, Berkeley, University of Washington, all in one conference. So with that being said, do these students feel a lot more comfortable with the academic degree that they're going to have behind them to go ahead and leave school early? Because it could almost be like almost a win-win scenario for them. Either they make it in the pros or they don't, but they still have that USC degree, they have that UCLA degree, they have that Stanford degree behind them. So either way, they're setting themselves up for success. So, and with that being said, do you think the Pac-12 schools are more of a disadvantage for kids leaving early because they know they have that academic background behind them and that degree, you know, for their future? Just a thought, just wondering. Maybe I'm wrong. But thanks, guys. Peristyle Podcast is the best.
You know, there is, I mean, I saw things to notice. There were times at Notre Dame when things weren't going so well that I still remember following him, you know, with Jerry Faust as the coach there, and I knew Jerry a little bit. And you realize their players knew they were going to be pretty good coming out with the Notre Dame degree. And they knew football wasn't going all that well. And so you got the sense at times that maybe they were kind of dissatisfied that, okay, I'll make the Notre Dame degree work for me as much as the football thing. You do want to have a balance. And there's no question. When you put the Pac-12 up against every other, you know, conference, it's just, you know, you go to the, I'm thinking of the SEC. You got Vanderbilt as a close to a top 25 program, academically, small school, but, you know, some really good professional schools. Then maybe you got the University of Florida as, might be a top 50 school. But when you look at the Pac-12, you know, you got, you know, Stanford and Cal and UCLA and USC, who in, you know, the one survey all would be top 25 schools. I mean, nobody's even close to that. I mean, it just, there's no other conference. And then, as you said, with Washington, gives you another, you know, top 50 school. And so, the Pac-12 is kind of in its own place. I mean, the Big 12, you got Texas. The Big Ten, you got Northwestern, and then, you know, you've got some, you know, obviously some, and it changes at different, you know, departments and programs, and, you know, schools like at Illinois might have, you know, great architecture school or whatever, but, the Big Ten has some, you know, some nice programs, not the same kind of top 25 programs that you have, you know, with the Pac-12, so, so I guess, you know, again, there's that sense of I'm going to come out of it with a USC degree or, you know, a degree from one of those schools, so I'm going to be in pretty good shape. I mean, and that's the challenge for the, you know, the program and the coaches, where you don't want to give them that choice. You want them to be able to be just as, you know, motivated because of a great football program as the academic program, and usually that's not a problem. Because, you know, you're getting kids who, you know, their whole life, you know, they want to go to the next level and they want to compete at the highest level. But, you know, but if you let the program, you know, kind of wander a little bit, they do have something else to fall back on. And that's a good thing. You want them to have that whole, you know, degree and that you know, family connection with, you know, job opportunities and things like that. That they have at USC, but it's a good observation. There's nobody even close to the Pac-12 and the Power Five conferences. I guess Atlantic Coast, you got Duke and Virginia and North Carolina. It would be ones that would, you know, challenge you know, for top 25. They're smaller, probably smaller schools in some ways. Maybe not have the, you know, the breadth of the, you know, the Pac-12 schools. But that's a good observation about the academics.
One last one for you, Dan. Well, it's a two-parter from Ron in Northern Virginia. First, he wants to know, is the number 5 retired, or can it be reissued to another player? Either the number is retired because he won the Heisman Trophy, or it's available for reissue because he's no longer being recognized. Why does the athletic department put it in jersey purgatory?
That's a really good question. For example, if the NCAA says you can't have any, you know, reference, Reggie Bush didn't exist. He's out of the record book. You can't have a, you know, his jersey up in a Coliseum. You can't, and you wonder, well, then if he's erased, then you could use that jersey for somebody else, I would guess, because Reggie Bush doesn't exist as far as the NCAA is concerned, or as far as USC is supposed to be concerned. I think that would be maybe at this point in time asking a lot to give that to somebody. I mean, I think it's just as much, you know, as the whole giving a you know, middle linebacker number 55, and that's a, you know, that's been made into, you know, such a, you know, a thing that, and maybe more so than it should be. I think, you know, I'm a very much do not care about numbers guy. I mean, the whole, you know, who's going to be wearing what number and all that, I really don't care. I mean, I think a lot of that came in, the more it happened, it seemed like it was maybe Lane as much as anybody. And Lane, you know, he took advantage of whatever he could take advantage of and push those, you know, those scenarios out there about what number you could wear and the single digits and all that kind of thing. I'm kind of somebody that just doesn't care about those numbers. And the whole retired number thing never made any sense, you know, with me at all. I mean, I don't know, maybe the Yankees retired Babe Ruth's number 3 and Lou Gehrig's number 4, and okay, that's fine, but if you're not Babe Ruth or Lou Gehrig or, you know, one of those guys, I don't see retiring numbers or, you know, getting all excited about, you know, who's the next guy in the number. Although I do think with Reggie right now, the focus would be so heavy on a guy wearing number 5 that you probably wouldn't want to do that to anybody. But and I didn't mind having, you know, Ronald Jones wear number 4 to honor, you know, Joe McKnight in the Rose Bowl. And I thought that was a really nice thing to do. But I think we can go overboard on the whole numbers thing, and I'd like to play it down as much as possible.
And the last part of his question was, what, if any, repercussions could the NCAA impose if Reggie Bush were to lead the team out of the tunnel for the Texas game? Could the NCAA issue new sanctions if he were to show up at practice or lead the team out of the tunnel on game day? I'm one of the many alum who is very upset by what Reggie Bush and his family did to our school, but we, not the NCAA, should decide the terms of re-engagement with our university. Ron in Northern Virginia.
Ron, you're absolutely right. No question about it. That's USC's call. I mean, I'd have trouble making the call in some ways just because of the other issues. I was talking to somebody the other day, probably have it in the war room, about the essential, crucial mistake in the whole Reggie Bush NCAA thing that came down to Reggie himself. But I don't think that's the NCAA's call. They've never done it to anybody else. Reggie, if you put a scale of just the Heisman Trophy winners in terms of who, you know, maybe violated NCAA rules, Reggie wouldn't even be in the top half, you know, in terms of, you know, the kinds of things people got from boosters and, you know, whether they were, quote, pro or not pro, or whether they were not an amateur, whatever. I mean, come on. Look at that list. And yet, he's the only one, you know, banned for life. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's what a joke. I mean, it's just a total joke. And you would like to see some negotiation going on right now. I think that's a big mistake USC made, not taking the Judge Schaller ruling and taking advantage of every way the NCAA was exposed from 2012 on. and forcing the NCAA to, you know, come to its senses. And I think there are ways they could have done that. And the idea that, you know, that they could ban Reggie for life is an absolute joke. So, you know, I would agree with you. I think there needs to be a kind of negotiation going on parallel to the McNair trial over the next year. And I think that would be one of the things that USC should put on the table. And maybe with an offer that, look, we know how the McNair case probably is going to go. We know what it's going to do in terms of, you know, exposing the NCAA's, you know, culpability here. And we may not decide to do anything, you know, in terms of litigation as a result of it. But here's what we would like for the NCAA in order to agree not to pursue what comes out in the McNair case. And one of the things ought to be that Reggie Bush is allowed to be a part of the USC story, as USC chooses, not as the NCAA chooses. It's not their choice. They've already done what they did in the Reggie Bush, you know, part of this case. And they lied. They made up evidence. And they shouldn't have the ability to separate him from the tradition and history at USC based on their own actions. They've disqualified themselves for having any say in how Reggie Bush fits into USC football history. That's my take.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I'd love to see someone inside the administration kind of put the NCAA's feet to the fire. We'll see. You know, maybe the Lynn Swann administration a year or two down the road, he does that. I don't see it happening right now, but maybe it happens at some point.
Yep. If only that person, if they just would listen to us, Ryan, just listen to us.
Yeah, we could go in there. Like, yeah, they
got
hire
a lot
us,
of
Dan.
Answers,
yeah. Dan, they hire us. The Coliseum renovation would be way better. We would try to get USC out of the Pac-12 TV deal.
There'll be something in the war room about that also. It gets worse. I don't even want to tell you where it gets worse, but read the war room.
Something to look forward to tomorrow morning in the war room. All right. Well, thanks, Dan, for coming on the show. Lots of good stuff. We got to get to some of the questions, and we'll see you out there at practice a little bit later today.
Yep. Can't wait.
All right.
See ya.
Thanks. That's Dan Weber. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Peristyle Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
Most people know that buying or selling real estate is no small undertaking. Understanding the market value of your home, pricing, advertising, closing, and perhaps even selling personal property along the way are all examples of the real estate journey. And Michael Moline Real Estate has the experience to help make that journey an enjoyable one. Southern California real estate inventories are at historic lows, so there is no better time than now to sell your residential property. Whether you're moving into a bigger home or downsizing, personal property is often a component of the real estate transaction. Michael Moline Real Estate has industry expertise to help you with both your real property and your personal property as you get ready to transition. Michael Moline Real Estate specializes in properties located on the west side of Los Angeles and the southern San Fernando Valley communities. Allow Michael Moline Real Estate to give you a free comparative market analysis and home valuation so you know how much your home is worth today. Contact Michael Moline at michaelmolinerealestate.com. That's Michael, M-O-L-I-N-E, Real Estate.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.